The Marxist system points us to an accumulation of revolutionary forces in the modern world. These forces will continually tend towards revolution. But Marx assumed too hastily that a revolutionary impulse would necessarily produce an ordered state of a new and better kind. A revolution may stop halfway in mere destruction. No socialist sect has yet defined its projected government clearly. The Bolsheviks, in their Russian experiment, seem to have been guided by a phrase, the dictatorship of the proletariat. And in practice, we're told, Trotsky and Lenin have proved as autocratic as the less intelligent but equally well-meaning Tsar, Alexander I. We've been at some pains to show from our brief study of the French Revolution that a revolution can establish nothing permanent that hasn't already been thought out beforehand and apprehended by the general mind. The French Republic, confronted with unexpected difficulties in economics, currency, and international relationships, collapsed to the egotisms of the newly rich people of the Directory, and finally to the egotism of Napoleon. Law and a plan, steadily upheld, are more necessary in revolutionary times than in ordinary humdrum times, because in revolutionary times society degenerates much more readily into a mere scramble under the ascendancy of the forcible and cunning. If in general terms we take stock of the political and social science of our age, we shall measure something of the preliminary intellectual task still to be done by mankind before we can hope to see any permanent constructive achievements emerging from the mere traditionalism and adventuring that rule our collective affairs today. This socialism, which professes to be a complete theory of a new social order, we discover, when we look into it, to be no more than a partial theory, very illuminating, so far as it goes, about property. We've already discussed the relationship of social development to the restriction of the idea of property. There are various schools of thought which would restrict property more or less completely. Communism is the proposal to abolish property altogether, or in other words, to hold all things in common. Modern socialism, on the other hand, or to give it a more precise name, collectivism, does clearly distinguish between personal property and collective property. The gist of the socialist proposal is that land and all the natural means of production, transit and distribution, should be collectively owned. Within these limits, there is to be much free private ownership and unrestricted personal freedom. Given efficient administration, it may be doubted whether many people nowadays would dispute that proposal. But socialism has never gone on to a thorough examination of that proviso for efficient administration. Again, what community is it that is to own the collective property? Is it to be the sovereign, or the township, or the county, or the nation, or mankind? Socialism makes no clear answer. Socialists are very free with the word nationalize, but we've been subjecting the ideas of nations and nationalism to some destructive criticism in this outline. If socialists object to a single individual claiming a mine or a great stretch of agricultural land as his own individual property, with a right to refuse or barter its use and profits to others, why should they permit a single nation to monopolize the mines or trade routes or natural wealth of the territories in which it lives against the rest of mankind? There seems to be great confusion in socialist theory in this matter, and unless human life is to become a mass meeting of the race in permanent session, how is the community to appoint its officers to carry on its collective concerns? After all, the private owner of land, or of a business, or the like, is a sort of public official insofar as his ownership is sanctioned and protected by the community. Instead of being paid a salary or fees, he's allowed to make a profit. The only valid reason for dismissing him from his ownership is that the new control to be substituted will be more efficient and profitable and satisfactory to the community. And, being dismissed, he has at least the same claim to consideration from the community that he himself has shown in the past to the worker thrown out of employment by a mechanical invention. This question of administration, the sound and adequate bar to much immediate socialization, brings us to the still larger unsolved problem of human association. How are we to secure the best direction of human affairs and the maximum of willing cooperation with that direction? This is ultimately a complex problem in psychology, but it's absurd to pretend that it's an insoluble one. There must be a definite best, which is the right thing in these matters. But if it's not insoluble, it's equally unreasonable to pretend that it has been solved. The problem, in its completeness, involves the working out of the best methods in the following departments and their complete correlation. First, education, the preparation of the individual for an understanding and willing cooperation in the world's affairs. Second, information, the continual, truthful presentation of public affairs to the individual for his judgment and approval. Closely connected with this need for current information is the codification of the law, the problem of keeping the law plain, clear, and accessible to all. Third, representation, the selection of representatives and agents to act in the collective interest in harmony with the general will based on this education and plain information. Fourth, the executive, the appointment of executive agents and the maintenance of means for keeping them responsible to the community without at the same time hampering intelligent initiatives. Fifth, thought and research, the systematic criticism of affairs and laws to provide data for popular judgments, and through those judgments to ensure the secular improvement of the human organization. These are the five heads under which the broad problem of human society presents itself to us. In the world around us, we see makeshift devices at work in all those branches, ill-coordinated one with another, and unsatisfactory in themselves. We see an educational system meanly financed and equipped, badly organized and crippled by the interventions and hostilities of religious bodies. We see popular information supplied chiefly by a venal press dependent upon advertisements and subsidies. We see farcical methods of election returning politicians to power as unrepresentative as any hereditary ruler or casual conqueror. Everywhere, the executive is more or less influenced or controlled by groups of rich adventurers, and the pursuit of political and social science and of public criticism is still the work of devoted and eccentric individuals rather than a recognized and honored function in the state. There's a gigantic task before right-thinking men in the cleansing and sweetening of the politician's stable, and until it's done, any complete realization of socialism is impossible. While private adventurers control the political life of the state, it's ridiculous to think of the state taking over collective economic interests from private adventurers. Not only has the socialist movement failed thus far to produce a scientifically reasoned scheme for the correlation of education, law, and the exercise of public power, but even in the economic field, as we've already pointed out, creative forces wait for the conception of a right organization of credit and a right method of payment and interchange. It's a truism that the willingness of the worker depends, among other things, upon his complete confidence in the purchasing power of the currency in which he's paid. As this confidence goes, work ceases, except insofar as it can be rewarded by payment in goods. But there's no sufficient science of currency and business psychology to restrain governments from the most disturbing interferences with the public credit and with the circulation. And such interferences lead straight to the cessation of work, that is, of the production of necessary things.